Okay, we're beginning here, 14 lines up on the bottom of Ayin Aleph and Bet. Just to review, the Gemara here is discussing Bavel with regards to the status of Bavel, that Yuchasin and Bavel are the best Yichus that you can have. The area covered by that is not really well defined, and that's what the Gemara is going to do here at the bottom of Ayin Aleph and Bet into Ayin Bet Amun Aleph. Amara Papa Sava Mishmei Durav. Bavel Bria. Bavel is healthy. Meshon Mita. Mishon is like death. Madai chule is like being sick. Elam goseset. And Elam is on its deathbed. Ma ben chulin the gosesin. What's the difference between someone who is ill and someone who is on their deathbed? Rov chulim the chaim. Most people who fall ill will survive and recover from the illness. Rov gosesim the mita. On the other hand, most people that are on their deathbed end up dying. So as the Gemara here is laying out, basically, the areas, Bavel Bria. Bavel is the area concentrated between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. And again, we're going to have more detail on that in a minute. That area is Bria, meaning healthy. That's the area where you could find the Yichus, and it is clean. On the other hand, when you're talking about Meshon, Meshon is further southeast of the area that is designated as Bavel, towards the Tigris-Euphrates Delta, where the Euphrates itself pours into the Tigris, before they then run into the Persian Gulf. At that point, that area is known as Meshon. There it's known as Mita. That's a problematic area because there are Mamzerim there. The Gemara will also discuss why that is the case and what might be the issue over there. On the other hand, to the east, almost directly to the east, you have an area of Elam. That area the Gemara terms as Goseset, which means that the majority of people found in that area are problematic. Madai, which is to the northeast, it's north of Elam, but east again of the Bavel area, that has problematic Yichus over there, but the majority of the people in that area are considered to be Miuchas. Now, despite the fact that it was far away from Bavel, it happens to be that there was a major trade route between Bavel and Ecbatana, which is the capital city of Madai. And therefore, there were Jewish communities that we're going to see mentioned actually in today's daf that were large Jewish communities that were settled along that trade route or at the ends of that trade route. And therefore, they got the same Yichus or they were defined by the Yichus of Bavel. And that's why even though Madai is further away than Meshon or than Elam, it still had a better Yichus because of its association or direct association with the area of Bavel and the areas between the Tigris and Euphrates. Now the Gemara asks, Ad Heichan Hu Bavel? How far does Bavel go? Now, obviously, that's a strange question, but in the context of what we're speaking about, how far is the definition of Bavel when we're speaking about the areas that are considered to be Miuchas? Now, the concentration of the Jewish community in that time period is between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. Both of those rivers run generally in parallel, but run from west to east in a north to south direction. So they are dropping south, but as they're dropping south, they're also shifting to the east. So the areas between the rivers, especially as the rivers get very close near the city of Baghdad, in that area, the concentration of the Jewish community has strong yichus, and that we're not questioning. The question that the Gemara has is, well, now if I look at the Tigris River, how far north along the Tigris River does that status remain? The same question will come up in a minute about how far north on the Euphrates River that's the case. And then the same question on the southern side would come up is how far south on the Hidekel and south on the Euphrates is this is true. Now, it's not only just going north. It really means what's the northeast corner because as the Tigris drops down, it's moving from west to east. So when you go up north, are you simply going up north? Are you also including some things to the east, which we'll see in a second might be the case? And the same with the Euphrates. As you move out to the north, are you also shifting a little west to include more areas in that Yichus or that is covered or considered to be Bavel? At this point, we're going to follow the Balei HaTosafot and not Rashi, assuming that the rivers flow north to south, which is the case. And therefore, even though Rashi says that the placement of these cities is asking how far south, how far north, it's the opposite of what Tosafot says. Nevertheless, we're going to explain the Gemara according to Tosafot because the cities on the maps tend to follow that perspective that we're talking about north when it's asking these questions and not south. So Gemara says, Achin hi Bavel, how far is Bavel? Rav Amar Ad Nahar Azak. Shmuel Amar Ad Nahar Yoani. So now, where exactly Nahar Azak is more difficult to understand, but Nahar Yoani is a river that runs parallel to the Tigris River. It's shifted slightly east and north of the Tigris River. And so what Shmuel is telling us is that the boundaries of what's considered to be Bavel are further east than we think, than the Tigris, and slightly north. It creates a more shaped area that is considered to be Bavel. And you can see that on the map that I sent out, that it extends the border to the eastern side mostly and a little bit to the north. The assumption is that Rav's statement is also along the Nahar Azak. It runs somewhere around that area on the eastern side. And then the Gemara asks, La'el b'diglat adhecha. On the Tigris River, up above, how far do we go? So this means really the northwestern side of the Tigris River. How far up do we go on the river? Rav Amar ad Bagda ve'avna. To Bagda, it's most likely Baghdad, although there is an alternate girsa over here. Ve'avna could either be a city that Rashi claims over here is very close by to Bagda, like Narvan. Or it could be further up north, closer to the city that Shmuel is going to identify along the Tigris River. Shmuel Amar ad Mushkani. Until Mushkani, which is a city further north along the river, which will give you the northern boundary of the Tigris River. So now we've laid out here, how far upriver does the boundary go? Let's say Mushkani or Vavno, where Shmuel and Rav are very close, that's how far north the border of Bavel is. To the east, we're saying that the border is this Nahar Yoani or the Nahar Azak. He says, "V'lo Mushkani bichlal," but the city of Mushkani itself is not included within the borders. V'amar Rav Chiya Ba'av, v'amar Shmuel Mushkani hare ki gola liyuchasin. Don't we have a memra from Rav Chiya Ba'av in the name of Shmuel himself that Mushkani is included in the areas that are considered to be yuchas? Elad Mushkani or Mushkani bichlal. So you have to read it. No, until Mushkani, Mushkani is included within the borders. L'tachtit b'diglat adhecha. The southernmost point on the Tigris River, what is considered to be the southernmost point that is part of this area that is miyuchas? Amar Shmuel ad Apamia tata, to the lower Apamia, until the place of Apamia, which is where the Tigris River splits. Tarte Apamaya havion. There were two cities or two areas known as Apamaya. Chade lita, one was the upper one, v'chade tatiata, and the other one is the lower one. Chada Kishera, one of them is included within the borders of Bavel and is considered to be Kishera, have Miuchas. Chada Psula, and one of them is considered to be problematic. Uben Chada Lechada Parsa, the distance between the two cities with the same name, or two areas with the same name, is all of a Parsa. Bekakapte Ahododi, because of this problem that one of them is Kishera and one of them is Psula, they are Makpid, Vafilu Nura Lo Moshli Ahododi, they didn't even lend a fire from one to the other, in order not to engender relationships or connections between the two cities, so that there would be no intermarriage between the two cities. V'simanach, and the way to remember this is, the psulta had mishtaya meshanit. The one that speaks with the dialect of Meshan is the one that is problematic. And we just saw before that Meshun or Meshan is south of Bavel. It's in that delta where the Tigris and Euphrates finally meet. That area of Meshon is problematic for Yehusin. So now the one, the Apamya, which is closer to the Meshan, or the area that speaks that dialect of Meshanit, that is the one that is problematic. And so that's how you remember that the lower one is the one that is problematic, and therefore the border of Bavel reaches into the lower one, but does not include the lower Apamya. And you can see that on the map, that's really the southeastern point of what is considered to be Bavel according to this. Now the Gemara does the same thing with the Euphrates River, trying to define the borders of Bavel. La'el b'frat adhecha. On the northern end of the Prat, how far north does the border go? So Rav Amar ad Akra do Tubanke, until the fortress of Tubanke. Shmuel Amar ad Gishra de Bay Prat, until the bridge of Prat. Now there is a bridge across the Euphrates River, which is an ancient bridge, which is much farther south. It's closer to the city of Bavel, which was Nebuchadnezzar's capital. And there is a bridge across the Euphrates. If Shmuel is referring to that, that might be supportive of Rashi's position that we're talking about the south here and not the north. But in all likelihood, it means a bridge that was higher up. In general, it must be on the map somewhere south of Pumpedita, in all likelihood, and north of Nahardah along the Euphrates River. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Ad Mavrat Gizma. And he says until the crossing, whether that's a bridge or a ferry crossing of Gizma, which is connected with the city of Gidama, which most likely was a little north of Pumpadita, that is where the northern border along the Euphrates River is. Now, Layit Abaye, V'item Rav Yosef, Abaye cursed, or Rav Yosef did, Adrav, those that held of this position of Rav, which is that the northern part was Akra de Tubankai, because Pumpadita was the city of Abaye and Rav Yosef. They were the Rosh Yeshiva in Pumpadita. And Rav's setting of the Akra de Tubanki as the northern border put Pumpadita outside or north of that landmark. And therefore, they were considered not to be miyuchasim. So they were upset about holding like that. Gemara says, Ad Rav Lait, Ad Shmuel Lo Lait. They only cursed Rav's position and not Shmuel's position. Shmuel's position is even further south. How far south is not clear here, but his position at the bridge is further south. Ella, Alayit Ad Rav, Koshken and Shmuel. They cursed someone who held like Rav, but certainly they cursed someone who held like Shmuel. Vibaitema, Olam Ad Rav Lait, Ad Shmuel Lo Lait. Some say no, that only people held like Rav were they upset about, but those that held like Shmuel, they did not curse. Begishtu de Beprat, Litate'e Havakai, that originally the bridge of Beprat was much further south. Vaid Nahu, Dalua Parsai, Persians moved it further north. So that might go along with the original statement that we made, that there was a ancient bridge that was in Bavel much further south, and that might have been moved further north by the Persians, and when it was moved further north, it went north of Pumpadita, and therefore for Abaye and Rav Yosef, that was fine. From the conversation here, you would also conclude that Rav Yochanan's Shita is north of Pumpadita, because they don't complain about Rav Yochanan's Shita. So it seemingly that it included Pumpadita within that area. Amalei Abaye Rav Yosef, Laha Gisa de Prat Ad Hecha. On that side of the Prat, meaning that to the western side of the Prat, how far does it go? So, Amar Lei, Maidatech, what are you worried about? Mishum Biram. Are you worried about Biram, which is basically west of Pumpadita? It's north, but mostly west of Pumpadita along the Euphrates River. Miyachse de Pumpadita, mi Biram Naspe. You don't have to worry about it because the most miyuchas families within Pumpadita marry people from Biram or the women of Biram. So Biram is clearly included within these borders. He doesn't give him a limit of the borders to the north or to the west, but he tells him that if you're worried about the city of Biram, that's definitely included. Amra Papa, Kimachloke de Yuchasin, Kach Machloke de Inyan Gitin. But Papa says the same way that the borders of Bavel are defined here, or we have Machlokot about where the borders are with regards to Yichus, and who is considered to be Nikia in terms of Yichus, so too with regards to Gitin. By Gitin, we know that the rules are that if you bring a get from overseas, you have to say Befanai Nichtav or Befanai Nechtam. That's not true if the get's brought in Eretz Yisrael, or if the get is brought from Bavel, because there they had Talmidei Chachamim, and we don't worry about it. What is considered to be Bavel for Gitin? Rav Papa says that the two are the same. For Yichus and Gitin, the areas are identical. Rav Yosef Amar, Machloket Leyuchasin. That the Machloket here is all about Yichus. Aval Gitin, Divrei Hakol, Ad Arba Tinyona de Gishra. Then, according to everyone, it goes after the second, until the second area of willows or reeds that are beyond the bridge. Where exactly this location is not clear, as well as the fact that is the bridge here referred to a real bridge, or is it referred to a ferry system that was over there? But that is what Rav Yosef says is a distinction with regards to the Gitin versus the Yichus. So Amar Rami Bar Abba, Chavil Yama, Tchilta de Bavel. The area of Chavil Yama is considered to be the finest in terms of Yichus of Bavel. The reason that they use Tchilta, Rashi says, is Tiferet Shel Chavil Yama. They are the glory, they are the best of Chavil Yama. Or the word Tchilet is a color that was worn by royalty, and therefore the Tchilet represents royalty or that of a high status of Yichus. Or others say that within a beged, the tchilet is the most fancy or the best part of the beged. So that's what it means. Tchilta de Bavel, the finest or the choicest of Bavel, come out of this area of Chavil Yama. What exactly Chavil Yama is subject to a machloket as to whether Chavil Yama means the areas that are further south near, which we're going to see in a second, Borsipa or Bavel, the city of Bavel, which is further south than we mentioned before, lower down on the Euphrates, when the Euphrates splits, and there's the right side of the Euphrates, over there you have the area of Bavel and Borsippa, if it refers to that area, or whether it refers to a place further north is not clear, but some explain that the Chava Yama has to do with the fact that this area was full of canals and water channels, and that's true both in the parts near Baghdad, but even more true as you move further south, that that's the case because of the fact that the rivers are moving closer and closer together, and in doing so, there are plenty of canals that are sit between the two rivers, and that's maybe why it was called Chava Yama. Then, Shunya, Viguvia, Techilta, Dechavil Yama. The areas of Shunya, Viguvia, and Techilta, the way Rashi explains it is that these are neighborhoods within Chavil Yama, meaning the city of Chavil Yama has these regions or neighborhoods within it, and those are the best of the areas of Chavil Yama. Others say that this refers to specific places, with Shunya being associated with the canal that is near Pumpadita, and Guvia being associated with a river canal that is just northeast of the Tigris River, or eastward of Baghdad. Ravina Amar Af Tzitzura. He also adds in the area of Tzitzura to this list, which is an area just southwest of Baghdad. Remember, Baghdad itself sits on the Tigris River. The Tigris River itself runs right through the middle of Baghdad. And it's in an area where the Tigris and Euphrates are at their closest point before they descend further south and actually join together. So Tanya Nami Hochi, we have a braita that supports this. Chanan ben Pinchas Omer, Chavil Yama, Techilta de Bavel. Shunya Viguvia Vitzitzura, Techilta de Chavil Yama. So we have a corroboration, the fact that Chavil Yama is a special location, and that these three other places, whether they're neighborhoods or specific locations, also have this special status as being the finest of Yichus. Amara Papa Vaidna Yarve Bahu Kutai. But today the Kutaim got mixed up with them. Now the problem is that there was some sort of intermarriage that went on, whether that was compelled or forced, or whether that was voluntary, but the Kutai got mixed up. The Kutai, or the word Kuti, is used in the Gemara, especially because of the censors, sometimes to refer to early Christians, sometimes to refer to Kutim, which means Ovdei Avodah Zarah, or sometimes to refer to the nation of Kutit. There it's not clear which one it is, Velohi. But this, what Rav Papa says, is not true. Itatahu Dabai Minayu. Rav Papa sought one of these women's hand in marriage, Velohi Avodei, and they refused to give her to him. So then he supposedly spread rumors that the place was not good. Rashi rejects that explanation and says it doesn't seem plausible, so does Tosafot. And rather what they said is that Rav Papa had heard a rumor that there was some sort of marriage proposals or something going on with intermarriage with Kutai. He never heard the end of the story, which was it never came to fruition and therefore it wasn't a problem. So he extrapolated or assumed based on the information that he had that there was a problem there. But in the end, that wasn't the case, meaning that the rumor or the beginning of this process never came to fruition. And if someone sought the hand of marriage of one of the people of this town or a Kutai did that, it was rejected in the end, and they did not intermarry. My Chavil Yama, I'm Rav Papa Zuprat de Bursi. So here, Rav Papa associates this Chavil Yama with the area south where the Euphrates River splits near the ancient Bavel and Borsippa, which is the Prat de Bursi, and that would make it much further south than some of the areas that we mentioned before that were closer to Baghdad, but then would accord with what we suggested that as you got further and further south, the number of canals and water that went between the Tigris and Euphrates increases, and that's why it's really called the area of the seas or the area of the channels because of that. And the Chavil Yama is referring to an area further south and not just a specific location. Hau Gavra, Damalahu, Ana Min Shot Mishot. He says, I'm from this place called Shot Mishot. Amad Rabbi Yitzchak Nafkal Raglav. Ve'amar Shot Mishot Ben Anaraot Omedet. That Shot Mishot sits between the two rivers, and when it sits between the two rivers, it's okay. Gemara says, V'chi Ben Anaraot Omedet, my Avi. Just because it sits between the two rivers, why does that mean anything, or why is that any benefit? So because of that, as you can see in Tosafot already, that's somewhat problematic, because the underlying assumption of the Gemara is that that which is found between the Tigris and Euphrates is considered to be Bavel, and that's not problematic. What we're only trying to discover is how far east, how far south, and how far north But that which is between the two rivers, anything that's found there, we assume is Bavel. So it's found between the two rivers, what's the question at all? And so why is the Gemara posing such a question? Therefore, there are those that want to suggest that the rivers being spoken about here are not the Tigris and Euphrates, but rather something much further south where either the Euphrates splits, or maybe something further north, which is above the area possibly of where between the Tigris and Euphrates, we automatically assume that those areas are Bavel. So Amarabai, Amarabi Chamabokva, Amarabi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Ben Anyaro, Tariyuki, Gola Yuchsin. Anything found between the rivers has a din of Gola for Yuchasin. Behechi Kaima. Where is this place? Amarabi Yochanan, Mihi, Dekira, Ula El. It is from the place of Ia Dekira and above. So now, if you look at Ia Dekira on the map, you can see that that's something that's further west of Biram, further west of Pimpedita. And before we spoke, Abai spoke about Biram, and Rabbi Yosef told him that that was fine. Ihikira is a little further north and west along the Euphrates River. And what Rabbi Yochanan is saying is that even that far up is fine along the Euphrates River. And that would have included Shot Mishot within the boundaries of that area. Vama Rabbi Yochanan. Wait a minute. Didn't Rabbi Yochanan tell us the most northwest point along the Euphrates Rivers was Admavarta de Gizma, was until the bridge or the ferry crossing of Gidama or Gizma? And that would have been, yes, west or north of Pumpadita, but not as far as E. Dekira. Samarabaye Ritsua Nafko. There is this strip that goes out. The end of the northwestern border is really at the area of the Mavarta de Gizma, but there is, and you can see it on the map, the Euphrates is really moving west at that point. There is some sort of strip that goes out towards the west that includes this area of E. Dekira in it. So Amar, so someone to suggest, based on Rabbi Yochanan's statement of Mihi Dekara, that Bena Neharot means between Ia Dekara and Anat, which are along the Euphrates rivers, and it would extend the area of Bavel much further northwest. And that's why the Gemara questions, wait, that's a very far way to go northwest. And they say, no, it doesn't include all the areas that far north and that far west, but just the strip probably along the Euphrates itself that extends up to Ia Dekira or Anat. Otherwise, it means up to Ia Dekira, and the two rivers that are mentioned here are the Tigris and Euphrates. So Amarav Yikabavin, Amarav Chananel, Amarav, Chilazoni Avand, the areas, whether these are two places or one place, they are Higi Gola Ulu Yuchasin. They have the din of Gola for the Yuchasin. Amarle Abaye Lo Tatsitule. Don't listen to him. Yevama Hi Dinaflele Hotam. He has a Yevama. His brother passed away without having children, and now he has a Yevama over there. And now he has to marry her. So he wants those areas to be considered Miuchas. And therefore, he's declaring them to be okay for his own benefit. Wait a minute, it's not from me. I'm not quoting myself about this. I'm quoting Rav Chananel, who quoted Rav. And therefore, it comes from Rav Chananel. It's not mine. So they went and they queried Rav Chananel to find out if it was really true. And he says, yes, I heard from Rav that Chilazon Nihavand, Harihi Kigola Yuchsin, that the area of Chilazon Nihavand is like the areas of Bavel that are considered to be Miyuchas. Now, most people say that the area of Chilazon, and we're going to see in a second in the Gemara, is associated with Chalvan, which is pretty far northeast into Madai, and Naharvan, which that sits along the river that before that Shmuel said was the eastern end of Bavel. And now what he's suggesting is either these two cities, or the range between these cities, or that area is considered to be Miuchas, as if it's part of Bavel, despite the fact that it extends out northeast. And again, this likely has to do with this major trade route that ran that way, that had large Jewish settlements along the trade route, and therefore they derived, or they came out of Bavel along the trade route and settled over there. And therefore the Yuchus is connected back to the core or ancient Bavel, and not to new communities or people had been put there beforehand, and not associated with Bavel. Where it says, Upligid the Rav Avar Bar Kahano, and that argues on Rav Avar Bar Kahano's view of these areas. Dama Rav Avar Bar Kahano, my dichtiv. What is meant by the Pasuk in Melachim, when Sancheriv puts the Aseret HaShvatim into Galut, it says, Vayemchem Bachlach, Ubechavor, Nahar Gozan, Varei Madai. So he sends them to all these places. Chalach, Zo Chilazon. So Chalach is this place called Chilazon. Chabor, Zo Hadayav. Chabor is the equivalent of Hadayav. Nahar Gozan is Zo Ginzak. Arei Madai, Zo Chamdan, Vechavroteha. That's Chamdan in its suburb, which many people are associated with Akhtabana, which is the capital of Madai. So he identifies these areas where they were put into Galut, the Aseret HaShvatim, the assumption being that places that the Aseret HaShvatim went, they ended up intermarrying. And since they intermarried, the people or the ichus of these places was either suspect or very problematic. And as Rashi says, even if they're not considered to be mamzerim, they're still gumim or possibly not Jewish at all. And therefore, naming one of these places, Chalach, as being Chilazon, says that Chilazon, according to this, was problematic. And that's where we see this disagreement about the status of Chilazon. Zvamrilan, some say, Zon Havan v'chabruta, that it's Havan and its suburbs. My chabruta, what are the suburbs? Amr Shmuel, Krach Moshchi, Chuski, Viromki. So these are suburbs either of Narvand or of Chalavan. Again, these are areas that run along this route. Narvand being much closer to Bavel and Chalavan being much further away. Rabbi Yochanan, Bekulam Lipsul. And all of them are problematic. Kasaka Dato, right now we think that Moshchi, Hainu Mishkani, that this place, Moshchi, that Shmuel mentions over here, that is a problematic suburb, is synonymous with Mushkani, which Shmuel mentioned before as being the farthest point along the Chidekel that is considered to be Bavel. Then we say already that that was the northernmost point, and we mentioned before that it was included within the border. That's not a stira. Moshchi and Mushkani are two different places. Mushkani is up north on the Chidekel, and whereas Moshchi is either a suburb of Narvan or Chalavan, and that is a problematic area, just like all of those areas nearby are problematic. Utlat al-in bepuma ben shina. So in the vision that Daniel has, he has a vision where he sees the bear holding in its mouth three ribs. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, zo chilazon hadayav v'nitzivin. The three ribs represent these three areas. The problem with the pasuk is that, as Rashi notes, it says it's in its mouth, bepuma, but it also says ben shina, it's between its teeth. So how do I resolve that? I talk about these three places called Chilazon, Adayev, Nitzivim, Shpamim, Blotam, Pamim, Pototan. That sometimes they are included, sometimes they are not included, sometimes they're expelled, sometimes they're taken in. Or in other words, these are border towns, which were sometimes taken over by Persia, and sometimes they were spit out, meaning that sometimes the Persians ruled over them, and sometimes they didn't. And those cities were border cities that went back and forth. And that's why the imagery is of these three ribs in the mouth, but not totally in, because sometimes they're taken in, sometimes they're not. Obviously, those were the border cities. And the reference here is because we mentioned Chilazon, that city before. You saw that with Chalvan, so those are cities that sometimes were included in the Persian Empire, sometimes were not included in the Persian Empire, and that might also have influence over whether these cities are considered to be part of Bavel or not part of Bavel. And now the Gemara continues to discuss that pasuk in Daniel, which says, Va'aru cheva achari, and then another animal emerged, Tinyana, the second one, Dami Ludovin, looked like a bear. Tani Rav Yosef, Elu Parsiim. These are the Persians, Sheochlim v'shotim kedov, that they eat and drink, they are gluttonous like the bear, Umusur levavim kedov, and they are heavy set, they are fleshy and fat like the bear, Umigadlin se'ar kedov, and they grow out their hair like a bear, and they have no rest, like the bear. Rabbi Yami Gavi Chazi Parsa Derochiv, when he saw a Persian riding on a horse or on a wagon, I knew Amar, I knew Dova Naido, that this is a mobile bear, this is a wandering bear, or a bear on the move. Now, what seems to be the reference over here, and we're going to see this in a second from Levi's statement, is that the Persians were extremely gluttonous, they ate a ton, but they also happened to be tremendous warriors. And in being tremendous warriors, they were like the bears. And the armies of Persia used to grow out their hair, and they used to be extremely strong and fierce. And we know that from the Gemara early on that says that there were 10 portions of Gvura that were given down to the world, and 9 of them were given to the Persian. In addition to that, they had a tremendous cavalry. So that might be also the reference over here, that when they were riding on a horse, it was like a bear on a horse, that they were these fierce fighters that came on the horses or the cavalrymen that came. So Amalei Rabbi the Levi. Rabbi says to Levi, Harani Parsiim. Says, tell me a little bit about the Parsiim. Rabbi was in Eretz Yisrael. Levi who came from the areas of Bavel. And Rabbi's trying to get some sort of imagery or understanding of what they look like. And Levi used to do these mashalim or these images before Rabbi, sometimes to make him laugh as a comical thing and sometimes just to help him to understand something. So he says, give me a sense of what these Parsiim are like. Amalei domim lechayalot shebeit David. They are like the armies of Beit David, meaning these fierce warriors. And that's what I mentioned before, that might be part of the imagery of the dove of the bear, that even though they were big and gluttonous, they also were fierce warriors. Harani Chavrin. What about the Chavrin, which are mentioned all over Shas? These are probably Zoroastrian extremists that were very religious. They worshipped the fire god, and therefore they caused problems for the Jews, especially when they took over, they came ascendant in the Persian Empire. They caused a lot of problems for the Jews that live in that area. And as the Marsha notes, that the Chavrin were the priestly class of the Persians, and therefore when they were ascendant or there were kings that were more favorably disposed to them, they caused problems because they brought in the quote-unquote religious law. And as the Gemara talks about, the problems with lighting Hanukkah candles because of the Chavrin. We couldn't have fire in the house because of these Chavrin who allowed only fire to be in the places of worship. So he says, Domim the Malachei Chavala. They are like these destructive Malachim, or these angels of destruction. Harani Ishmaelim. What would you say about the Ishmaelim? Domim the Si'irim Shel Beit HaKisei. They're similar to the Shedim that are found in the bathrooms. Rashi connects that to the Melubashim Shchorim, Domim the Shedim. That they are dressed in black and similar to the Shedim. So Rashi sees it as a connection in their dress or the way that they appeared. Whereas the Marsha says it has to do with the nature of their cleanliness, which is that the Sirim and the Beit Kisei obviously don't worry about their cleanliness or any etiquette. And that's what he's comparing the Ishmaelim to. And then he says, Hareni Tamidei Chachamim Shebavel. How would you describe the Tamidei Chachamim Shebavel? He says, Domim Lamalechei Asheret. They're like the angels that service God. So Rashi again says that they're all dressed in white, and we have examples of that in the Gemara in Shabbat with Amoraim that were going out to greet the Shabbat, and they used to dress up in their tzitzit and in their white cloak. The Gemara there describes that they look like Malachei Asheret. On the other hand, the Marsha again here says it has to do with their conduct and their behavior, how they were Nikiim, they kept themselves clean, and they had proper etiquette and were makpid on how they presented themselves. When Rabbi was passing away, Amar, he says, Homanaya Ika Bebavel. There's this place called Homanaya in Bavel. It's pretty far south on the Tigris River. Kula Amunayehi. That whole area is full of Amunayim, or somebody who comes from that area has a problem in terms of Yichus, because it's not a Jewish area, but rather a place of Amunim. And we're going to see in a second how that has influence on the Jewish towns that are around it. What's interesting here is that Rabbi, as we saw in the early Adapim, refused to get involved in this issue of Yichus in Bavel because he originated from Bavel. He was a Nasi descended from Hillel HaBavli, and therefore he didn't want to cast dispersions on anybody from Bavel, the areas of Bavel, and he didn't want to discuss it. Here on his deathbed, it seems that he brought it up. Maybe that goes together with the Gemara from yesterday that spoke about the disclosure of the information to their children and to their students once a Shemitah, or once every 7 years, twice every 7 years. This might be Rabbi giving that information over, disclosing that information. The Gemara sees some of this information as being somewhat prophetic, that whether he had this information or he had some sort of prophecy that revolved around it, because he's going to make other statements here that are prophetic in nature. Masgaraya Ika Babavel Kula de Mamzera. It's a place called Masgaraya, and that city is full of Mamzerim. Birka Ika Babavel. There's a place called Birka in Bavel, which is near the river of Al-Melik. Shnei Achim Yesh, there are two brothers there. Shemachalufim Nishotayim Zelazeh, they swap their wives out between them. And then obviously that causes problems of Mem Zerut. Birta Desatya, Iga Bavel. There is a place, Birta, in Bavel, Desatya, from the word Stia, to go off the path or the straight and narrow, which is that they've left the faith, which is Ayom Saru Machrei Amakom. Today, they left the faith, and they are no longer Shomrei Torah Mitzvot, and they've rejected Judaism. They had these fisheries, the ponds where the fish were kept, overflowed on Shabbat, or that there were plenty of fish within these fisheries on Shabbat. And then they went and they captured the fish, or they took the fish that either overflowed from these fisheries, or fish ponds, or that where the fish became so plentiful it was easy for them to catch, and they went and caught them on Shabbos. Shamtinu Rav Achai b'Rabbi Yoshaya. Rav Achai b'Rabbi Yoshaya put them into excommunication because of what they were doing. V'ishtu mad. And then they renounced their Judaism because of that. Or they were destroyed. This part of what Rabbi's saying is clearly of a prophetic nature, because he's saying, Hayom, it happened today. And it's interesting that Rabbi, who was found in Eretz Yisrael, has so much commentary, so much to say about Bavel, and as well as the Yuchasin that are in Bavel, even though he's found in Eretz Yisrael, and the only real connection that he has to Bavel at this point is his Talmud Mufak Rav, who moved out to Bavel. And so therefore, it's very interesting that he's speaking so much about what's going on in Bavel. Akra Dagma Ikaba Bavel. And again, here, there is this Akra Dagma, which is either a place called the Fort of Agma, or that's the name of the place, Akra Dagma, which seems to be somewhere near Pumpadita. Ikaba Bavel, Adaba Ava Yeshba. There's an individual called Adaba Ava who's there. Hayom Yoshev Bechekol Shel Amram. Today, he is sitting in the hands of Avram Avinu. Now, there are two possibilities of what that means. Either that means Yeshomim Meit, that's based on the Gemara in Baba Batra, in the beginning of Baba Batra, that when people pass away, they go through Marat HaMachpelah on their way out. So that could be the meaning over here. Or Avram Avinu also could be associated with Brit Milah, which is that Rav Adar Ba'ava was getting his Brit Milah on that day. So Rashi favors that interpretation because he says, as far as we know, Rav Adar Ba'ava lives for a long time, until the time of Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, and therefore if he passed away now when Rabbi's speaking, it's very difficult to understand how he'd be alive in the time of Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, and it makes much more sense that he got his Brit on this day, and then had a long life and lasted until that point, which is difficult because Rav Adar Ba'ava is like a fourth generation Amora in Bavel, and so to connect him, even if he was born at the time that Rabbi was older or passing away, it'd be difficult to understand how he lived so long from the time of the passing of Rabbi all the way till the fourth generation of Amoraim. And that's what Rashi says. He did live a very long life. Tosfot prefers to say that to solve the problem, as he does many places in Shas, says that there were two individuals called Rav Adar Ba'ava. And Hayom Nolad Rav Yehuda B'Bavel. And Rav Yehuda was a second generation Amora, who was a Talmud Muvak of both Rav and Shmuel. And this is the Stam Rav Yehuda that's found in the Gemara, who was Rav Yehuda ben Yechezkel, was born today in Bavel. Damar Mar, Kishamet Rabbi Akiva, who is a third generation Tana, passed away. Nolad Rabbi. Rabbi, who is a fifth generation Tana, was born. Kishamet Rabbi, when Rabbi passed away, Nolad Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi was a fifth generation Tana, the last of the Tanaim. When he passed away, Rabbi Yehuda was a second generation Amora in Bavel. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Yechezkel was born. Kishamet Rabbi Yehuda. And when Rabbi Yehuda, who's this second generation Amora, passes away, Nolad Rava. Rava was a fourth generation Amora, was born. Shemed Rava, Nolad Ravashi. And Rav Rava passed away, who's a fourth generation Amora. Ravashi, who's a sixth generation Amora, is born. Lelametcha, to teach you, Shein Tzadik Nefter Me'olam, Achenivra Tzadik Kemoto. That a Tzadik doesn't pass away from the world until he basically has his replacement to fill in his shoes or to come to fill the shoes. And what you see here are that every other generation is what they are speaking about. Rabbi Akiva, who was the major part of the Mesorah, he's the one who establishes the Mesorah after all of his Talmidim die during this period of time of the year. And then he has the five Talmidim that he teaches that basically become the Stam Mishnah, the Stam Sifra, and the Stam Alocha all over Shas, are Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. And then after him, the great Rabbi, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who puts together the Mishnah, comes after him. And then, after Rabbi passes away in Bavel, we have the two yeshivas. You have yeshiva of Rav in Sura, and you have the yeshiva of Shmuel in Narda. The yeshiva in Narda, a little time after Shmuel's death, is destroyed. And then, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Yechezkel, who was the Talmud Muvak of Rav and Shmuel, opens up the yeshiva in Pumpadita. And then, they become the two major yeshivot for many, many years in Sura and Pumpadita. Two generations later, Rova, who opens up the yeshiva in Mechoza, and when his peer Abaye is the Rosh Yeshiva in Pumpadita, Rova takes over for Rabba in the yeshiva in Mechoza. And then after Rova passes away, Rav Ashi comes about, who's in Matamachsia, which is another area where he established the yeshiva. These were temporary areas. The two main yeshiva remain in Sura and Pumpadita for many, many years into the time of the Geonim. But in each of these cases, you have some major figures within the world of the Mesorah. You have going from Rabbi, then down to Rav and Shmuel, who obviously, Rav is a Talmud of Rabbi, but then Rabbi Yehuda, who basically establishes the Torah of the Amoraim in Bavel, because he brings the Torah of Rav and Shmuel, who are the first generation Amoraim in Bavel. Then after him, you have Rava, who throughout Shas, we know how important and how central Rava is to the Mesorah within Shas. And then after him, you have Rav Ashi, who, again, is considered to be a central figure within the Mesorah. And what we're saying here is that every time a tzaddik or someone who was central to the Mesorah passed away, there was someone else to fill in their shoes. Shenemar, the Pasuk tells us, V'zarach HaShemesh, Uva HaShemesh, that the sun rises and the sun sets. Ad Shelo Kabta Shimsho Shel Eli, before the sun set on Eli, meaning him being the Shofet, V'zarach HaShemesh Shel Shmuel HaRamati, the star rose for Shmuel the Navi, Shenemar, because it says, after Chana brings Shmuel to live up in the Mishkan with Eli, it says that Shmuel is sleeping there, V'nera Elukim Terem Yechabeh, that before the candle of the menorah went out, Shmuel shochev, Shmuel is sleeping, laying down, and then he gets a message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu basically telling him or speaking to him, and he's got to tell Eli that he's going to pass away and that his children are not following in his footsteps, and that's going to be the end of his rule, and that his family is going to be punished, and basically bringing about the ascendancy of Shmuel, the destruction of the Mishkan and of the Beit Eli, and then Shmuel, who becomes the Navi and takes over as the Shofet of Israel. Now, based on that, many interpret this to me, not literally that when the person is born on the day the other one dies, because over here you see that Shmuel was already born before Eli passed away, but rather that the rise of Shmuel already begins before the passing of Eli. But when Eli is passing, the ascendancy or the rising star of Shmuel is already in place to take over or have that baton passed to him. And similarly over here, it doesn't mean literally that Rabbi Yehuda was born on the day that Rabbi passed away, but rather Rabbi Yehuda already was rising and becoming a new star at the point of time that Rabbi passed away, and therefore there was this sense of passing of the baton between them. And that might make sense with the Pasuk, which says, V'zarach HaShemesh Uva HaShemesh, that the sun rises and the sun sets. Even though it's the other way around, first the sun sets and the sun rises, but rather here we have the sun rise, meaning the new generation that's coming up, and then the sun sets. And then only once the sun has risen on that new generation does the sun set on the previous generation. It also tells you that the sun that is rising is not necessarily the same sun that is setting. And therefore the new generation is picking up or filling in the shoes for the previous generation. But the concept is similar, the idea is the same, which is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu always makes sure that there are Gedolim or Tzaddikim that take over and can fill into the shoes of those that pass away. So we're never left bereft of having that type of Torah leadership within Klal Yisrael. Now the Gemara quotes a pasuk from Eichan, says, Tziva Hashem LeYaakov Svivav Tzarav. The Hashem made sure that Yaakov or Klal Yisrael are always surrounded by their enemies. Rabbi Yehuda says, you know what an example of that is? Kegon Hamonia LePumnaro. That is like Hamonia, which if you remember in the statement of Rabbi just before, said that Hamonia was full of Ammonim. And now Pumnaharo is a large Jewish city that is along the Nar Sura that runs, is a canal that runs between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers that was adjacent to Hamanaya. And so Hamanaya had these difficult individuals, the Ammonim, that caused problems for the Jews of Pumnaharo. And as Rashi says over here, Ammonu Moab, who were problematic when we lived in Eretz Yisrael, and when we were in Yerushalayim, they also were problematic for the Jews who lived in Bavel, Ammonim, that are right next to them in Hamonaya, that were still causing the problems even after they were put into Galut in Bavel. Now the Gemara moves on to Psukim from Yechezkel and explains, Vahi, Yechezkel says in Perek Yud Aleph, he's having a nevuah about the destruction and the death that's going to be brought upon Bnei Yisrael. And it says there, Vayiki Nab'i Upaltayo Ben Benaya Meit. And as he's having this nevuah, this individual passes away. Ve'apol al panai, and I fell on my face, Yechezkel says, ve'ezak kol gadol, and I called out in a great voice, v'omar, and I said, aha, adoshem elukim kala ata oset sherit Yisrael, you are wiping out the remnant of Klal Yisrael. Rabbi Shmuel argue about what was the nature of Yechezkel's comment over here. One of them says that this individual was a good individual, and Yechezkel was upset, and that's what he's saying to Hashem, you're wiping out the Sherit Yisrael. The other one says, no, that this individual, Paltiyahu ben Benaya, was a problematic individual, and what he was calling out to Hashem was, how could you just let him die a normal death? How come you don't punish him in a way that indicates that this person who did such bad things is being punished, and that will help the other people to know what the proper way to behave is? Mandamar the Tova, the one who says that he was a good individual, Kiha Distandro de Meshan, like the governor or viceroy of Meshan, Khatne de Buchadnezzar. It turns out he was the son-in-law of Nebuchadnezzar. That is, this area of Meshan that we talked about before, that is southeast towards the delta where the Tigris and Euphrates meet, that Erev Meishan was ruled by Nebuchadnezzar's son-in-law. And that day, many of the marriages were done out of political considerations in order to secure the areas and have them ruled. So his son-in-law, the person who married Nebuchadnezzar's daughter, was ruling over this area just south of where Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom or capital city was. Shalach lei mikuli ay shivya de'aitit lecha. From all these captives that you got, lo sharet lan, you didn't send us anybody to the Kaila Kaman to work for us or take care of us. By the story lei Israel. So then Nebuchadnezzar figured, I got a bunch of extra Jews around here. Let me send them south and let them go work for my son-in-law down south. Amalei paltiyahu ben benayahu. Benayahu ben Yahu spoke up and says to Nebuchadnezzar, Anon de chashvina neku mikamach. Hacha. We who are more important of stature and people should be the servicing the king himself or the royal areas. You should keep us over here by you. But Avdin and the servants or slaves that belong to us or from the other nations, Nizul Atam, you should send them over there. Ve'amar Navi, Misha asah tova b'Yisrael, yamut b'chetzi yamav. Someone who spoke up on behalf of Klal Yisrael and protected them, kept them in the area of Bavel where they could still remain Jewish, practicing Jews, and not intermarry, not have, be under the auspices of what seemingly was a terrible dictator, his son-in-law down south. He protected the Jews. He's going to die at a young age. That's what he was saying. You're going to wipe out anybody who's good. You're wiping them out. There's going to be nothing left for Klal Yisrael. So that's the one who says it was the Tova. Manda mar the Ra'ah, the one who says it was negative, Dichtiv. So now the Gemara goes to a Pasuk that is found in the same Perek, at the beginning of the Perek. It says, V'teveu til shar beit Hashem akadmoni. Hashem brought me to the eastern gate of Hashem, apone kadima, that is facing west, east. V'nei apetach hashar yasrim v'chamisha ish. And at that doorway, there are 25 individuals. And amongst those 25 individuals, there are et Ya'azanya ben Azur, ve'et Paltiyahu ben Benayahu Sareya'am. We're amongst those 25 people. And then Hashem continues, V'melai ben Adam, Eile Anashim Achushvim Oven, V'yotzim Atzad Rabbi Yerazot. These are not good people. These are people who are thinking evil thoughts and sinning thoughts and give bad advice to the people of the city. And so on and so forth. The Nevuah continues until the Pasuk where Paltiyahu ben Benayah passes away. So according to this individual, that Paltiyahu ben Benayah was amongst these 25 men. And then they move to the Pasuk in Perichet, which also describes 25 men. Over here, the Navi never makes a direct connection between these two incidents, but the Gemara is saying, well, there are 25 men here in the Perek Yud Aleph. We go back to Perichet, there are also 25 men. And these people are doing something bad. And what's described in Perichet is a terrible thing. Hashem is showing Yechezkel all the terrible things that Bnei Yisrael are doing by the Mikdash. And these 25 people are involved in something bad. So the Gemara connects like an Agadic Gezer Shev between 25 and 25. And assumes that Paltiyahu ben Benayahu was involved in this that is mentioned in Perichet, which is, and he brought me into the inner courtyards of the Beit HaMikdash. The door to the Heichal Hashem, where you have an area between the Ulam and the Mizbeach. There were 25 people found there. Basically, between the Mizbeach and the entrance to the Heichal, that area of the Ulam, there are the stairs that ascend up to the area of the Heichal. There were 25 people found there. Achorehem el Heichal Hashem. Their backs were towards the Heichal. Upnehem Kedma. And they were facing east. Remember that the Beit HaMikdash is laid out in such a manner that the Kodesh HaKodeshim is the most westerly part of the Beit HaMikdash. That means that you enter, and that's what we saw before in the previous parak, that they were in the eastern gate entering in. And so if you're facing towards the Kodesh HaKodeshim, you would be facing westward and not eastward. But over here it says that their backs were to the Heichal Hashem. Upnehem Kedma, and they were facing east. Obviously, if your back is towards the western side where the Kodesh HaKodeshim is, you're facing east. Behema Mishtachavim Kedma LeShamish. And they were bowing down to the sun, meaning turning their backs on the west towards the Eichal, and bowing down to the sun that was on the eastern side. And the Gemara asks about that. Mimashma Shenemar Upnehem Kedma. If you tell me that they're facing east, and Yodeh Shachareim Kapei Marav, don't I know that their backs are towards the west or towards the Eichal? Matamalomar, what is that telling us? That their backs were towards the Heichal Hashem, that it wasn't simply that their backs were towards the Heichal Hashem, but that means that they were, that they used to expose themselves, and they used to defecate towards the Kadosh Baruch Hu. It was simply enough that they were bowing down to the sun, And of course, they were ignoring Hashem or turning their backs on Hashem. But the pasuk specifically tells us not only did they bow to the sun, but they did things that were denigrating towards a Eichal Hashem, and not just ignoring it, but doing things that indicated their disgust and their disdain for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Become our Navi. Misha sara zot b'Yisrael yamut al mitato. How could it be that someone who does this terrible act? Now again, here, this is the one who says Paltiel ben Benayel was not a good person. And based on this Gzer Shov 25:25, there he says, what, therefore, what Yechezkel is saying to Hashem is, how could he be that he just dies a natural death? Let us assume that Shmuel is the one who says that this statement of Yechezkel was negative, and that Paltiel ben Benayel was not a good person. That he says that Moshchani has a din like the Golal Yuchsin. Meishon lo chashula, lo mishum avdut, v'lo mishum mamzerut. That when it comes to Meishon, nobody worried about avadim there, and nobody worried about mamzerim over there. Ela, kohanim sheyuba lo ikbidu ala grushot. The problem that we have there is that the kohanim would marry grushot, and therefore you would end up with chalalim, kohanim chalalim, which are not asur lavo bakal. They are problematic. They're not kohanim anymore, but they're not problematic to marry. Now, based on the other interpretation that we saw before, that Benayel ben Dayel convinced Nebuchadnezzar not to send any Jews down south to the Meishan area, but rather to send Abadim down there, then you would have a problem. When he says there's no problem Meishan of Avdut, there is a problem of Avdut down there, or possibilities of intermarriage of Avdut, because that's who was sent down there. So it seems that Shmuel is saying that he was an evil individual. And that's all that we just described over here about bowing down to the sun and turning his back on Hashem. And that's why he's asking rhetorical question. How could it be that he died such a natural death? He should die a terrible death. So everybody knows that you can't do these types of things. On the other hand, the other opinion is that he did something good by keeping the Jews further north and sending the Avadim down south. But Shmuel says there were no Avadim. We don't worry about Avadim down south. Where it says, no. Shmuel was the one who says that he was a positive individual, and he saved the Jews from having to go south. And the Avadim did go down there. So then why does he not worry about the fact that there are Avadim down there? Shmuel Tamei. And Shmuel is to his Shita that we saw in the Gemara in Gittin. Damar Mafkir Abdol. When someone disowns his slave, Yatzada Cherut, he goes free. So we know as far as the monetary side or monetary ownership over here, the slave is released through Hefker. The question is, do they need a Get Shichrur to release themselves from the Avdut, or the Easter side of the Avdut? Shmuel believes that Evid Yatzada Cherut, Eino Tzarich Get Shichrur, does not need a document of emancipation. Unlike the other opinions that do feel that way, Shmuel says he doesn't need a document of emancipation. And therefore, since these slaves were taken away from their Jewish owners against their will, or they were taken down there forcibly, they, in essence, were freed. They became Mufkar, because the ownership of their Adon, their masters, was taken away. If they became free, then they are no longer Avadim. Once they become free men, then they are full-fledged Jews, because an Eved Kanani and a Shif Kanani undergoes a partial conversion when they enter into that position. And then if they are free, they become full-fledged Jews, or that's the end of their Geirut. And that's what happened over here. Shnemar, kol Eved Ish, miknat kesef. So Gemara asks, Eved Ish, v'lo Eved Isha? They're a slave to a man, not to a woman. Ela Eved, sheyesh lo reshut rabo alav karoy Eved. A slave is only called a slave if their master can exert control over them. Eved shein lo rabo reshut alav. Then an Eved where the master cannot exercise control over him, enu karoy Eved, is not called an Eved, and therefore he's no longer an Eved Kanani. So enu chanami the Avadim did get sent down there, but once they were sent down there, they were automatically released because they were taken out of the auspices of their owners, and once they became free, they became full-fledged Jews at that point. So Amar Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Zo Divrei Rabbi Meir. The way Rashi reads it, the majority of people read it, that means our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Meir, who makes these distinctions between what the Yichus in Bavel and other areas. And then the Chachamim believe that Yichus is not so particular to a single area, or that other areas where Jews settled, the people are considered to be Miuchasin. And therefore Rabbi Meir is the one who says that Bavel has this unique standing within Yichus, based on that Mishnah. As the Chachamim said, that that's not unique to Bavel, that anywhere, any other lands also have that same status. Amemar Sharile the Ravuna Barnatan, the Minsa Vitata Mechuzaita. Amemar gave permission for Ravuna Barnatan to marry a woman from Mechuzataita. Now, whether that's connected to Mechuza, which is the city where Rova was the Rosh Yeshiva, which sits west of the Tigris River by the Nahar Malka, very close to Nahar Da. Zamele Ravashi Madatech. What are you thinking? Dam Rav Yehuda Meshmol Zod Divrei Rabbi Meir Avachamim Amrim Koratzot Bechezkat Kashrut Ein Omdot. You think that the way to read the Mishnah is that it's a dat yachid of Rabbi Meir, but the Chachamim say that all the other Aratzot areas are fine in terms of Yichus. So Rav Ashi is a sixth generation Amora, who is the Rosh Yeshiva in Matamachzia. Two generations after Rava was the Rosh Yeshiva in Mechoza, which is the city of Rava. So whether they're talking about Mechoza here is difficult, because Mechoza seems to sit within the boundaries that were laid out in the beginning of the daf that we spoke about today. And therefore, it's not clear why that would be excluded from Bavel, unless you say that once the yeshiva and Mechoza moved from Mechoza over to Naresh and then over to Matamachzia, that took away the yichus of the area of Mechoza, and it was no longer considered to be a place of yichus. Or you have to say that this Mechozaita was a place outside the boundaries of what they considered to be Bavel. And therefore, he seemingly was relying on this statement that we had from Yehuda Amar Shmuel, that Rabbi Meir was a dat yachid and our Mishnah is not the halacha. But he says, Vabe Rav Kana lo matni hachi. The Beit Midrash of Rav Kana does not learn the Mishnah as being a dat yachid of Rabbi Meir. Be Rav Papa lo matni hachi. Neither does Rav Papa. Be Rav Zvid lo matni hachi. And also, Rav Zvid does not learn the Mishnah as being a dat yachid of Rabbi Meir. So here you have all these fifth generation Amoraim, where he's saying that they did not accept this statement that the Mishnah is a dat yachid of Rabbi Meir, and therefore the Chachamim believe that the other areas have a chezkat kashrut. For the Achilu Kibla Minei, despite the Rav Ashi's criticism of that statement of a Meimar, he did not accept it from Rav Ashi, Mishum Deshmiyalei Mirav Zvid de Narda, because he had heard it directly from Rav Zvid of Narda, and Rav Zvid of Narda had quoted it in the name of Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, that there was no problem with other areas because the Mishnah is a dat yachid of Rabbi Meir. And now, the Gemara moves to a machlok between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir with regards to latid lavo, what's going to happen in the future in the time of Mashiach when Eliyahu and Navi shows up. Tarabanan, mamzere v'nitine tehorim latid lavo, divrei Rabbi Yossi. Yossi says in the future, mamzerim, nitinim, who come from the givonim that converted in the time of Yeshua and later were pushed out of Bnei Israel by David HaMelech because of their behavior. So those Mamzeim and Nitinim, which are problematic, and if they intermarried or they're part of the families of Bnei Israel, are problematic, in the future they will be made Tahor. Rabbi Meir Omer, ain't Tahorim. Rabbi Meir says they will not be Tahorim. Now, their machloket could be, according to some, a fundamental machloket, as to whether in the future everybody will become Tahor and there will be no Psulim, Latid Lavo. Or the other possibility is that Rabbi Yossi is only speaking in cases of safek. Families that have a safek about the issue of a mamzer and natin in them, then Eliyahu and Navi and the atid lavo, they will be cleaned out. But not if there is a vadai problem of a natin or a mamzer amongst them, that will not be corrected for. So there are two different ways to view the machlokot, or how extreme Rabbi Yossi's opinion is, as to whether it means completely there won't be any problem of mamzerut and natinut in the future. The Ramban himself, who subscribes to that position, says, well, then what happens to the law of the Torah? There is a law in the Torah of Mamzerut. So the Ramban says, yes, he's going to be mitayer anybody who was a Mamzer until that point in time. But then there'll be a reset, and anybody who acts after that point in time and violates the Isurim that generate a Mamzer will create a Mamzer. But until that point in time, they will cleanse all of the Begamim that are found in Yichus. And so they take it very literally, that it means there will be none of these Latid Lavo. Well, the others just say this with regards to Sfeikot, and that's what Rabbi Yossi is suggesting. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir believes that none of this is going to happen, and all the psulim will remain psulim. Amar lo Rabbi Yossi, look, v'ne'emar, doesn't say in the Pasuk Yechezkel, v'zerakti aleichem ma'im torim u'te'artem. Says, I will sprinkle on you the waters of purity, and then you'll become pure. Amar lo Rabbi Meir, u'kshomer, mikol tumoteichem u'glo gululeichem. The Pasuk continues and says, mikol tumoteichem u'lechem etaretchem, that I will cleanse you from all of your defilement and your impurity. But lo min ha-mamzerut, doesn't say I'm going to purify you from being a mamzer. Amar lo Rabbi Yossi, k'shomer et ta'ir etchem. That other et ta'ir etchem at the end of the pasuk comes to say that there's an additional tahara that is being brought over here. So not only from the gilulim and from the tuma, but also from the mamzerut. Aviyomer af min ha-mamzerut. Bishlo mother Rabbi Meir, according to Rabbi Meir, shita einu dichtiv, I understand what the pasuk in Zechariah means, vayashav mamzer ba'ashdod, that the Bamzerim will be isolated and segregated in Ashdod. So latid lavo, they will be segregated and kept aside because of their problems. And that makes sense going to Rabbi Meir, because they'll still be Mamzerim, latid lavo. Ela Rabbi Yossi, Mai Yoshev Mamzer Bashdod. Why would they segregate the Mamzerim in Ashdod. Rezez kid the Mitargim Rav Yosef. It's the way that Rav Yosef translates the pasuk into Aramaic. Remember, we note this many times. Rav Yosef fell ill later on in his life, became blind, and therefore he could not learn Torah Shebichtav directly, and therefore he became a baki in Targum. It says Yatvun Beit Yisrael the Rochatzan ba'arohon, that Bnei Israel will live and settle peacefully in their land. That we were once before considered to be strangers in the land. Because in the time of Yoshua, they did not conquer certain areas, like the area of Ashdod. So even though it was divided amongst the Shvatim, they never successfully conquered those areas. And so since they would never successfully conquer those areas, they were like strangers in their own land. But they will settle in areas that they were once strangers. So they will settle in the area of Ashdod, which they were once strangers to, because they were never able to conquer it in the time of Yoshua. But l'atid lavo, they will conquer it, and that which was strange to them, they will now settle there as the dwellers of that place. And so therefore the word mamzer is used for a zar, to be someone as an outsider, or someone who doesn't fit, or doesn't belong there, and that refers to the relationship of the Jews to Ashdod, which they were never successful at conquering, even after it was divided up amongst the Shvatim. I'm Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Rabbi Shmuel, Alocha, ki Rabbi Yossi. Over here, the Alocha is like Rabbi Yossi. I'm Rabbi Yosef. If Lav, the Amar, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Rabbi Shmuel, Alocha, ki Rabbi Yossi. Had it not been for the fact that Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Rabbi Shmuel, says the Alocha is like Rabbi Yossi in this case, then, Abba Ati Elio, Mapik Minan, Tzvarane, Tzvarane, Kolarin. He would have to take out, whether it's neckfuls or neckfuls or groups of groups, people, Kolarin, or the word kolar, is like a collar. It was usually used as an iron chain, meaning that something where you take prisoners or you take out people who don't belong. So it's over here. He would have to take out groups and groups of individuals, chain them up and segregate them and take them out, because there are so many psulim that got mixed up amongst Klal Yisrael. But now that we pass on like Rabbi Yossi, Latid Lavo, all those will be Torin, and Eliyahu Levi will not have to segregate or break out those individuals. Tarabanan. Ger nosei mamzeret divi Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says, and this is a gemara that we saw earlier in the Masechta back on Daf Samech Zayin with regards to the gerim, that a ger is allowed to marry a mamzeret because Rabbi Yossi believes that a ger is not considered to be a kahal, and therefore they're not restricted about the lav that a mamzer has to come into Kal Hashem, because the ger does not have that status of Kal Hashem. Yudomer ger lo yisa mamzeret. Yehuda believes that a ger does have a shame of a cow, and therefore he may not marry a mamzeret. Echad ger, echad evech mishuchrar, v'chalal mutarim b'kohenet. In addition to that, a convert, an eved that was freed, or a kohen chalal can marry a bat kohen. A bat kohen or a kohenet has no restrictions in terms of marriage. The restrictions are only on a kohen. So a kohen can't marry a chalala, can't marry a shifcha that was freed, and cannot marry a gioret. But the opposite is not true. The Bat Kohen has none of those restrictions. So now the Gemara explains this machlok between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Chamisha ke'alei ketiveh. There are five times the word kahal appears in the psukim by the case of mamzer. Here Rashi enumerates them as the following, which says in the Perek of Gimel in Parashat Ki Teitzeh, it says, lo yavo p'tzu adaka krut shafcha b'kal Hashem. Rashi does not count that kahal, because there, the problem is a problem of a physical mum, not a problem that comes from their ichus. And therefore he says that kahal doesn't count. The Ravid argues on him and says that this is one of the kahals that counts. The next one in Gimel is lo yavo mamzer bikal Hashem, that's number two. Gam dor esiri lo yavo lo bikal Hashem, that is number three for the Ravid, number two for Rashi. Then in Pasuk Dalet it says lo yavo amoni amavi bikal Hashem. Gam dor esiri lo yavo lehem bikal Hashem ad olam. So between the pasuk of Mamzer and Amoni Amovi, you have four times the word kahal. The Ravid thinks the one by kahal mentioned by Ptzu Adaka and Krut Shofcha is also counted. Rashi says the subsequent pasuk about the Edomi and the Amitzri are also included here, which is a couple pasukim later. It says, Banim Asher Yivaldu Lehem Dor Shlishi Yavu Lehem Bikal Hashem. When it comes to Amitzri and Edomi, they're allowed to enter Kal Yisrael after three generations. Rashi counts that as the fifth kahal that's being mentioned over here. The Ravid on the other end says no, that the kahal mentioned by Ptua Daka and Krut Shofcha is excluding them from marrying to Klal Yisrael. The Kal Hashem is Dor Shlishi Yavo Lehem Bikal Hashem, that they're allowed to join the Kal Hashem, and therefore that Kal Hashem has a different meaning. It's not a restricted kahal, but rather a permitted kahal, and therefore it's different usage in that pasuk, and that's why he doesn't count it. But Rashi counts the five that are not included under Krut Shofcha and Ptua Daka. Now the Gemara says, Chad Kohanim, Chad Levim, v'Chad Yisraelim. three of those words, gahal, come, to tell us that the Kohanim, Levim, and Israelim are restricted from marrying into these kihilot, these individuals, whether it's an Ammoni or Moavi, or whether it is a Mamzer, you're not allowed to marry them. V'chad mishrei Mamzer b'shtuki. One of them comes to teach us that a Mamzer can marry a Shtuki. If you remember in the Mishnah, a Shtuki is someone who knows his mother but does not know who his father is, so he's a Safek Mamzer. V'chad mishrei Shtuki b'Yisrael. One of them is to be Mater a Shtuki to marry b'Yisrael. Because Kal Gerim lo yikre kahal. For Rabbi Yossi, there's no kahal left over, and therefore the Kal Gerim, it doesn't have a status of kahal. Since it doesn't have a status of kahal, even though they're full-fledged Jews, they don't get a status of kahal, then there's no restriction against them marrying a mamzer. Now, as far as the shtuki is concerned, and we're going to see this in the Gemara in a second, that the drusha that the Gemara is relying on, that the kahal here means a kahal vadai. That when it says, lo yavo mamzer b'kal Hashem, it means that the mamzer may not enter the kahal vadai. But that's not true of a shtuki who is not a kahal vadai. Therefore, they're allowed to marry. And the same thing is true the other way around, which is only someone who is a mamzer vadai is restricted in coming into the kahal Hashem. But if they're not a mamzer vadai, then they're not restricted in coming to kahal Hashem. Therefore, shtuki is permitted to marry both the mamzer, as well as marrying a regular Yisrael. Rabbi Yehuda, Kohanim Levim, Echad Kal Nafke. He clothes Kohanim and Levim under one kahal, because Kohanim and Levim are basically Shevet Levi, just subsets of Shevet Levi. He artelay the kahal Gerim. Therefore, he has one extra word of kahal, which says that Gerim do have a status of kahal, and since they have a status of kahal, they may not marry mamzerim. Vibayitema, Hani Nami Trei Kali Ninhu. Now, that Kohanim and Levim are kept separate. Mamzer b'shtuki u'shtuki b'Yisrael mechad kal nafka. On the other hand, he combines the two limidim of a mamzer from a shtuki to marry a shtuki and a shtuki to marry Yisrael. He learns that they have one word, kal nafka, which is lo yavo mamzer b'kal Hashem. Mamzer may not enter a kal Hashem. Mamzer vadai hu de lo yavo. A mamzer vadai may not join the kal Hashem. Ha mamzer safek yavo. A shtuki who's a mamzer safek can join the kal Hashem. And b'kal vadai hu de lo yavo. Habikal Safek Yavo, and a Mamzer may not join the Kal Hashem when it's a Kal Vadai. But if it's a Kal of Safek, which is this Shtuki, then he's allowed to marry them. Vibaitema, the Rebuta's position is the following. Hani Nami Trei Kale Ninu. Those are also two Kale. We use two words of Kal for the Shtuki. Vitami the Rebuta Mehocho. But rather, Rebuta's Shita comes from the Posuk in Bamidbar, which says, Vakal Chukachat Lechem Ulager Agar. So he takes the Posuk, it's obviously parsed and out of context, but he says that the din of kahal, there's one din for you and for the ger. And therefore the ger has the same status as you with regards to the kahal. Rabbi Yossi, chukachat ichzik ten inyan. The word kahal is not juxtaposed to the ger. It says a kahal. And then it says chukachat lechem veleger agar. So the chukachat separates between the word kahal and the ger. And therefore the kahal is not modifying the ger, and the ger is not considered to be like a kahal. Echad ger, ve'echad ben mishuchrar, v'chalal mutarim bekoenet. So this is the last part of the Braita that we brought before that tells about the machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. In the end, we said that when it comes to a bat kohen or kohenet, she has none of these restrictions. Misaile the Rav. This helps Rav's position. Dam Rabbi Yehuda Marav. Lo huzuru ksheirot inaseh the psulim. Women do not have a restriction for marrying psulim, meaning that the kohenot do not have the restrictions like the kohanim have, and therefore they can marry these psulim. Again, they have the same restrictions of marrying mamzerot or nitinim, same one that anybody or any Israeli would have, but they don't have the additional status like the Kohanim, where they're not allowed to marry a divorcee, where they're not allowed to marry a halal, where they're not allowed to marry a Eved Mishuchrar. Dorish Rabbi Zera b'Mechuza. Rabbi Zera was Dorish Mechuza. Ger mutar b'mamzeret. A ger can marry a mamzeret, like the Shita of Rabbi Yossi. Ragmua kuliyama b'etrugayu. All the people there stoned him with their etrugim. Amarava, miyika dorish milta ki hai b'dukta d'shchichi giyori? How can you go out and give a drush like this in a city that's full of gerim? Because the gerim are going to be upset by the fact that you're putting them in the same category as mamzerim, as if you're somehow diminishing their status. Dorish rova mimchuza, ger mutar b'kohenet. He says that a ger can marry a kohenet. Obviously, because a kohenet doesn't have any need to marry with status, but it makes it look like that the ger can marry a woman of status. And therefore, it gave the gerim a feeling of belonging and a part of the higher class of yichus in Klal Yisrael. Tanua b'shirai. When they threw or they loaded him up with this silk, they were showing how pleased they were with this psak that Rova had given. Hadar darashtu ger mutar b'mamzeret. Then afterwards, he brings that and says the ger is mutar b'mamzeret. Amalei, afsita l'kamaita. You ruined the first thing you did. Before you said that we were up in that high elevated status, we can marry a kohenet. Now you're telling us you can marry mamzerim. I did the best thing for you. Now you have all the options open to you. If you like someone who's a mamzer, you can marry them. You like somebody who is a kohenet, you can marry them. Meaning that you have the largest choice or options available to you because you're not restricted from marrying anybody. So even though you think this might be some sort of denigration of your status, in truth, it just opens up all the possibilities to you. So I did the best thing for you. Behilkata, the halacha is, ger mutar b'kohenet, umutar b'mamzeret. A ger, like the shita of Rabbi Yossi, is mutar to marry a mamzer, and a ger is allowed to marry a kohenet. Mutar b'kohenet, it can marry a kohenet, lo huzaruk shirot inaseh l'psulim. Because kohenot, or bat kohen, doesn't have any restriction about who she marries, and therefore she can marry a ger. Mutar b'mamzeret, ki Rabbi Yossi, and they're mutar b'mamzeret, like the shita of Rabbi Yossi. Because remember, we have a machlok between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. The halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots in the middle of Ayin Gimel, Amud Aleph.